Welcome back, everyone, to the deep dive. All right, today we're diving into a pretty fascinating case, actually, one that really gets to the heart of product liability.
Yeah, this one's a big one.
It's called Bifulk v. Philip Morris Incorporated, a 2016 decision from the Connecticut Supreme Court. And it tackles a question that I think is really interesting, especially if you're a law student out there.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The question is, can cigarette companies be held liable, you know, be held responsible for designing their products in a way that makes them unreasonably dangerous?
Basically, like, can you sue a cigarette company for making cigarettes?
Right. But it's not that simple.
Right.
Because we're talking about unreasonably dangerous under Connecticut law.
Exactly. And that's what makes Bifulk so interesting. It's not just like, are cigarettes dangerous?
Right.
Because everyone knows that.
Yeah.
It's, did the company do something in the design, in the manufacture of the cigarettes, to make them even more dangerous?
Right. Like over and above
right.
what we expect.
Exactly. And so this case really gets into the weeds of different areas of tort law.
Yeah.
We're talking restatement second, restatement third.
Okay. So we're going to get into all of that. So the goal for today is to really unpack this decision. We're going to pull out the key arguments. We're going to look at the court's reasoning. And we're going to talk about why this case is so significant, particularly for law students out there who are focusing on product liability. So, are you ready to dive in?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, to set the stage, let's talk about the facts of the case. Who are the parties? What happened? Take us back to the beginning.
All right. So, this case is all about a woman named Jeanette Bifulk.
Okay.
And sadly, Jeanette died from lung cancer at the age of 42.
Oh, wow.
Way too young.
Yeah.
And she had smoked Marlboro cigarettes for decades, starting when she was just a teenager.
So she had a long history, unfortunately, of smoking.
Long history.
Yep.
Oh, and after her death, her husband, Vincent Bifulk, he sued Philip Morris.
The maker of Marlboros?
That's right. And he sued them under the Connecticut Product Liability Act. We'll call it the CPLA.
Okay, the CPLA. Got it.
Yeah.
So he's suing them. And I think this is where it gets kind of tricky, right?
Yeah.
Because it's not just that cigarettes are inherently dangerous.
Right.
We all know that.
Right. That's not enough to sue someone.
Right. So what's the legal argument here?
So his argument was that Philip Morris had specifically designed Marlboro cigarettes to be more addictive.
Okay.
And to cause cancer, like more than they needed to.
So this is about design choices.
Exactly. They're saying you added certain chemicals, you manipulated the nicotine levels, you did things in the design of the cigarette that made them more dangerous than a regular cigarette.
I see. So it's not just about cigarettes being bad. It's about choices that Philip Morris made to make them quote unquote worse.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a really important distinction.
It is.
So this case went through the courts for a while. And finally, in 2016, it lands in the lap of the Connecticut Supreme Court. And they have to answer some pretty big questions about product liability.
Yep.
So what was the first big issue that they tackled?
Well, the first big question was, how do you even decide if a product has a design defect? Like, what's the legal standard?
Okay, that makes sense. You need a standard to measure against.
Right. And there was actually some debate about whether Connecticut should abandon its traditional way of thinking about design defects.
Oh, interesting. So they were considering changing the rules of the game in the middle of the game.
Kind of, yeah. So for a long time, Connecticut had been using the restatement second of torts.
Okay, remind us, what's a restatement?
Yeah, so for those of you who aren't super familiar with torts yet, restatements are basically like these really important summaries of common law.
Okay, like the best practices.
Yeah, kind of. Like if you want to know what the law is on something, you look to the restatements.
Got it.
So Connecticut had been using the restatement second, but Philip Morris, they were pushing for the court to use the restatement third.
Okay, so two different versions. What's the difference?
Well, the restatement second, it gives you two ways to figure out if a product's design is defective. It's got the consumer expectation test and the risk utility test.
Okay, two tests. That sounds kind of complicated.
It can be. But the restatement third, it only uses the risk utility test.
Okay. So what did the Connecticut Supreme Court do? Did they switch over to the third restatement?
Nope. They stuck with the second restatement.
Okay, so they kept the two-pronged approach.
Exactly.
All right, so let's break this down. What exactly does the consumer expectation test ask?
So basically it asks, is this product more dangerous than an ordinary person would expect it to be?
That's interesting. So it's about what a regular consumer would think.
Right. Like, if you buy a toaster and it explodes when you plug it in, that's probably more dangerous than you'd expect.
Right, that's a bad toaster.
Exactly.
All right, that makes sense. What about the risk utility test? What does that look at?
Okay, so the risk utility test is a little more complicated. It's basically weighing the dangers of a product against how useful it is.
Okay, so you're looking at both sides of the coin, the good and the bad.
Right, like, yeah, this product might be dangerous, but it also saves lives or makes our lives easier in some way.
I see. So it's not just black and white.
Nope. And a big part of the risk utility test is looking at whether there were other ways to design the product that would have made it safer.
Okay, so could they have designed it differently to reduce the risk?
Right. Could they have made it safer without sacrificing the product's usefulness?
That makes sense.
And the court in Bifalk, they were very clear about this. They said that if you're going to argue that a product is defective under the risk utility test, you have to show that there was a reasonable alternative design.
So you can't just say it's dangerous. You have to show that there was a better way to do it.
Exactly. You got to have a solution, not just a complaint.
Okay, I'm with you. So that covers the design defect standard. What was the next big legal hurdle in this case?
All right, so the next big issue was about negligence claims.
Negligence, okay.
And specifically, it was about this idea of a product being unreasonably dangerous.
Okay.
So there's this section in the restatement second, section 402A, and it kind of links this idea of unreasonably dangerous to what a consumer would expect, like we were talking about with the consumer expectation test.
Okay. So the question is, does that same logic apply to negligence claims under the CPLA?
Exactly. That's what the court had to figure out.
So what did they decide?
Well, they made a distinction. They said that when you're talking about negligence, the standard for unreasonably dangerous is broader. It's not just about what a consumer would expect.
Okay, so it's not limited to consumer expectations.
Right. It's more about this general idea of, did the manufacturer act reasonably? Did they take reasonable care in designing and making the product?
I see. So it's about the manufacturer's actions, not just the product itself.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. So we've got the design defect standard, and we've talked about negligence. What was the third big legal issue in Bifalk?
This one is a hot topic. It's about punitive damages.
Oh, yeah. Those are the big ones.
The ones that everyone wants to talk about.
All right. Remind us, what are punitive damages again?
So punitive damages, they're not just about compensating the victim.
Right.
They're about punishing the defendant.
Okay.
It's like saying, you did something really bad, and we're going to make you pay extra to make sure you don't do it again.
And to deter others as well.
Exactly.
All right. So the question in Bifalk was about whether there was a limit on punitive damages under the CPLA.
Right. So under Connecticut common law, there was this rule that said punitive damages couldn't be more than the plaintiff's litigation costs.
So you couldn't punish the company more than what it costs to sue them.
Right.
Okay. But this case was under the CPLA, not common law.
Exactly. So the court had to decide if that same rule applied.
What did they say?
Well, the majority of the court said no. They said that punitive damages under the CPLA are not limited by that old common law rule.
So they could be much higher.
Potentially, yeah.
Wow. That's a big deal.
It is. Because now companies could be facing much higher penalties.
Right, if they're found to have acted really badly.
Right. But there was actually some disagreement on the court about this.
Oh, okay. What was the dissent?
So, Justice Svirtifoy, she wrote a dissenting opinion specifically about this.
Okay.
She argued that when the legislature created the CPLA, they didn't explicitly say they wanted to get rid of that old common law rule about limiting punitive damages.
I see. So she thought the court was going too far.
Yeah, she thought they should have stuck closer to the traditional way of doing things.
Okay. So we see some differences of opinion on the court. Now, we also mentioned earlier that Justice Sorella wrote a concurring opinion.
Yep. He agreed with the majority's answers to the legal questions, but he wanted to emphasize something.
Okay, what was he passionate about?
He felt very strongly that Connecticut should ditch the consumer expectation test altogether.
Oh, wow. Get rid of it completely.
Yep. He thought that the risk utility test was the only test that should be used in design defect cases.
And he had said this before, right? In another case.
Yeah. In Israeli v. R.J. Reynolds, he'd made the same argument there.
So this was a consistent view for him. What was his reasoning? Why did he feel so strongly about this?
Well, he basically argued that the consumer expectation test just doesn't make sense for complex products.
Like cigarettes.
Right. Things where the average person doesn't really understand the technical details of how the product is designed.
I see. So for something like a cigarette, you might know that it's dangerous, but you wouldn't necessarily know what design choices made it more dangerous.
Exactly. And he thought that the risk utility test, it provides a much more objective standard. You're looking at the hard facts about the product's risks and benefits, not just what people assume.
Okay, so for him, it's about focusing on the data, the science, the evidence.
Precisely.
All right, so we have the majority opinion. We have Justice Retifoy's dissent on punitive damages, and we have Justice Zarella's concurrence about the design defect standard. All these different perspectives.
Right. And it really shows how the law is constantly evolving.
Yeah. You have the traditional views, and then you have these newer ideas coming in challenging the status quo.
Exactly. And the courts have to figure out how to balance all of that.
So after all of this legal wrangling, what ultimately happened in BIFOC? What was the outcome of the case?
So the Connecticut Supreme Court, they didn't actually decide the case itself.
Oh, what do you mean?
They sent it back to the trial court.
Okay, so they kind of hit the reset button.
Yeah, they said, okay, we've clarified the law. Now you go back and apply it to the facts of the case.
And what happened at the trial?
Well, we went to trial in 2017, and Philip Morris, they actually won.
They won. So even after all of that, they weren't held liable.
Right. The jury decided that Mr. Bifolk didn't prove that the design of Marlboro cigarettes was negligent.
Wow. So even though the case raised all these big legal questions and led to some important rulings from the Supreme Court, Philip Morris still came out on top.
Yep.
But even though they won, Bifolk is still a really important case, right?
Absolutely. It's a landmark case in product liability.
Why? What makes it so significant?
Well, for one thing, it established this idea that even if the inherent risks of a product are well known, like everyone knows cigarettes are dangerous,
yeah,
you can still sue the manufacturer for making design choices that make the product even more dangerous.
So you're holding them accountable for going above and beyond the baseline risk.
Exactly. And the court's ruling on punitive damages, that also has a big impact.
Right, because now companies know that they could be facing much higher penalties.
Exactly.
So BIFOC really highlights this tension that exists in product liability law.
Yeah, this balance between protecting consumers and allowing companies to innovate.
Right. You want companies to create new products, but you also want to make sure that those products are safe.
Exactly. And BIFOC shows us how the courts are grappling with that challenge.
So as we wrap up our deep dive into BIFOC, what are some key takeaways for our listeners, especially for those law students out there?
Well, I think one of the biggest things to learn from this case is that courts are very cautious about changing well-established legal rules.
Like they did with the restatement second. They stuck with it.
Exactly. They want to see a really good reason before they overturn something that's been in place for a long time.
Makes sense. Stability in the law is important.
Absolutely. But that doesn't mean the law is static.
Right. It's always evolving.
Exactly. As society changes, as technology changes, the law has to adapt.
And BIFOC shows us how those changes can happen.
Yep. And for you law students out there, one really important thing to remember is that statutes can create different rules than common law.
Like we saw with the punitive damages issue.
Right. So always pay attention to the specific language of the statute. Don't assume that the common law rules will always apply.
That's a great point. Well, this has been a really fascinating deep dive. Thanks for sharing your expertise with us.
My pleasure.
And for all of you listening out there, we'll leave you with a final thought. Think about this. Given everything we've discussed about BIFOC, what do you think about the ethical responsibilities of manufacturers, especially when they're designing products that have known risks, and even more so when those products have the potential to be addictive? It's a question that goes beyond the legal issues, and it's something that I think we all need to grapple with as we think about the role of products in our society. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. We'll see you next time.